Good morning and welcome to Ashworth Road. I'm Ryan Leonards. I'm a team pastor here at Ashworth Road, and I'm so excited about this message today as we go through the big story of God and continue that series. I want to start out, this weekend we had a new movie came out by Tom Hanks called Bridge of Spies. Did any of you go see that yet? A few of you. I see big smiles by the people who went. It's supposed to be this great movie. All the reviewers are saying it's amazing. And it got me to thinking about some of my favorite Tom Hanks movies, because he looks like he's becoming an old man now. But I remember way back, it's been 21 years now since Forrest Gump came out. 21 years, that was in 1994 that movie came out. And I love that movie, because it's awesome, and it's this amazing story of this, it intertwines this fictional character with all these real life events that he happened to stumble in and upon, which is just really cool writing. But there's one scene in particular from Forrest Gump that I love, and it's while he's walking, he's in Vietnam in the army, and I watched it on YouTube to make sure that I got the scene right, and he's walking through and he says the rain's pounding and pounding and pounding, and just like that it stopped and the sun broke, and there's like a second of silence, and then all of a sudden bullets start flying and his troop is ambushed. And everybody drops down, and people are getting hurt. And his general just starts telling him, retreat, run, get out of here. So Forrest Gump does what he does throughout the entire movie, it seems like. And he turns around, and he runs. And it shows him running through the jungle, passing all these other guys, because he's this incredible runner. And then he gets to the edge of the jungle, and he turns around, and it says, and I turned around and looked, and I'd outrun everybody else. And he realizes he's safe, he's out of the battle, but he's all alone, and none of the rest of his troops are with him. And he says, well, it's not good for me to be here alone and safe. I need to go help bring others to safety. So he turns around, and he runs back into the jungle. He's looking for his best friend, Bubba, and Bubba Shrimp, and Bubba, all those different types of shrimp. But he's looking for his best friend, Bubba, but he stumbles instead upon a soldier who's injured. So he picks up that soldier, puts him on his shoulder, runs him back out to safety, sets him down, says, well, I got to go get Bubba. Turns around, goes back in, finds another soldier. It's not Bubba, but he puts him on his shoulder, runs out. He does this 3 or 4 times before he finally gets to his friend Bubba and saves him too. But we've got this amazing picture of a guy who says, you know what, I need to go and get myself to safety, but that's not good enough on my own. I need also to bring the rest of my troop out to safety with me. And that storyline actually has a lot more to do with our own lives as we talk today than you might think. As we continue our series on the big story of God, last week we came to the point where we learned about how Jesus Christ offered himself on the cross for all of our sins. When we look at that, the big story of God, we had creation was perfect, but then the fall came and ruined everything, and we have sin. And then there's this covenant that God makes with Abraham where he says, I'm going to restore everything. And then God gives the law, and the law is to try to show us our sin and to make kind of a temporary way for us to make up for our sin. But ultimately, when we got to Jesus, we learned that Jesus was the fulfillment of the covenant. And Jesus was the satisfaction of the law that said the law is now fully fulfilled. Jesus is the one who completely, finally restores us in our relationship to God, just like we had in the garden. But the story, like Brent pointed out last week, it didn't end there. Jesus didn't just die on the cross so that you or me could be saved. But just like Forrest Gump realized, okay, I'm saved, and that's good, but it's better for me to go get everybody else who's in that battlefield out and bring them to safety. We have to recognize as Christians, it is better for us after we are reconciled to God and we find salvation through Jesus Christ that we say, no, I need to put myself back in the battlefield. There are people that are in the battle of life for their souls, and I need to go get in there and bring them to safety. I need to tell them about the good news of Jesus Christ. And today as we look at this story, I want you to recognize that the story of God is actually literally being written right now today. Jesus is the one who makes salvation possible. But now we're in this age where we, all of us, make up the church. Everybody through all time who's put their faith in Jesus makes up the church. And Jesus gave the church this mission to say, go out and tell all the world about me. He told us that we're the ones who are to go out and let people know that they too can have a life-changing encounter with Jesus Christ. And as the church, that's what we're called to do. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, we find the Apostle Paul is explaining that exact mission to the church in Corinth. So if you want to turn right now, we're going to be in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 today. And I'm going to unpack everything from chapter 5, verses 14 through 21. But I want to start first with the main idea that I think Paul presents in verse 18. Chapter 5, verse 18, Paul's writing to the church in Corinth. That's kind of a messed up church, but they're growing really, really fast. And Paul, in part of this letter, is just laying down the foundation message about Jesus Christ. And this is what he writes. All of this is from God. That all of this is Jesus dying on the cross for us. All of this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. So basically, Paul's saying, God reconciled you through Jesus, and now you have a ministry to bring that reconciliation to others. And now, right now, I realize I'm using this word reconciliation, or to reconcile. It's not a word that we use that often. Maybe accountants use that word. But when we really look at what that word means, it means to reestablish proper, friendly, interpersonal relationships after they have been disrupted or broken. So to reconcile means you were friends, you were on good terms with somebody, but then something happened and the relationship was broken. It was severed. It was damaged in such a way that you weren't friends anymore. But the act of reconciling something means that that friendship and that brokenness is healed and the relationship is restored. And you're able to be back in relationship with that person like you used to be. Maybe some of you have experienced reconciliation in relationships with friends or family members where you had a close relationship, but then they did something, or maybe you did something, and it broke the relationship. Maybe you have a story of an estranged family member that for years never came around to Christmas because they were hurt by something that happened. And they felt like, you know what? You guys don't want me there. But if you've experienced reconciliation, what it means is something happens. Somebody does something to take an active step to bring that relationship back together. That person comes back to fellowship. They come back to the family Christmas. That you're able to have a relationship with them like, you know, maybe you understand that that event still happened, but you're able to have a relationship that's as strong as it used to be before. That's what it means to be reconciled. And if we think about it, if that's what it means to be reconciled, then the entire arc of the biblical story, it fits this idea of reconciliation so well, doesn't it? The whole story of the Bible is Adam and Eve had perfect relationship with God. God walked through the garden and talked with Adam. But then something happened. They disobeyed God. They ate the fruit off of the tree. And the relationship was disrupted. It was broken. And God promised, I'm going to restore it. And it was through Jesus that we have the full restoration of that relationship. Jesus is the one that says, essentially, you don't have to go through the whole temple system to get to God anymore. You can come directly to God with your prayers and with your conversation, with your supplications, with your worship, through me. And then, even better than that, after Jesus goes up into heaven, he sends us the Holy Spirit. And he basically says, now each one of you who put your faith in me, you can have the Spirit of God inside of you. So everybody who has faith like Abraham did in Jesus, we now have this personal relationship because we have the Spirit of God inside each and every one of us. That's what it means to be truly reconciled to God. And so now, as we find ourselves reconciled to God by putting our faith in Jesus, we join the mission of the church that goes before us, that's been going all the way back to Jesus' original 12 disciples. That's where the church started. And it's grown and it's expanded. And more people have joined this mission. And as they've joined this mission, they've told more and more people about the reconciliation that Jesus offers. They recognize, or we recognize just like them now, that we have a responsibility more than just our own salvation. We have a responsibility for all those around us to hear the message of Jesus. Just like Forrest Gump, he could have gone out to that to the shore and said, "Hey, I'm safe." But he said, "No, I need to go back, and I need to save them." And that's what we are called to today. Our mission as the church is to reconcile the world to God. We are to make sure that every person who wants a restored relationship with God finds it through Jesus. Now that we understand the mission that we've all been called to, both individually and corporately as a church, it's time for us to look at the rest of this passage to back up to verse 14. So I'm going to read to you now chapter 5, verse 14 and 15. It's on the screens. It starts out, "For Christ's love compels us." I love that phrase. "For Christ's love compels us because we are convinced that one died for all and therefore all died. And he died for all that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again." Your motivation to join the mission, to be willing to jump back into the battlefield, to offer reconciliation to the world, is that you first understand Jesus died for all. When you understand that, when you first get Jesus died for me, Jesus died for every person in my family to know him. Jesus died for all of my coworkers to have their relationship with God reconciled. Jesus died for all my friends who maybe have all sorts of junk in their lives and turmoil and conflict. He died for them to have peace. It's when we recognize that we are fully compelled to join this mission. Christ's love compels us. When we look and we go, "I cannot believe that a man gave his life for me," somebody he'd never meet, somebody 2,000 years later, somebody who's screwed up and done so many wrongs against him, he died for me. And it's when we fully understand that love, when we grasp it and we go, "God, you are so big. Jesus, your love is so amazing and so boundless." It's that when that happens, that we are motivated to get out into this world and to tell people about this message that Jesus died for them as well. And joining the mission of the church, it means that we stop living for ourselves, like Paul says. He says that we stop living for themselves, but for him who died. We live for Jesus, who is the head of the church. And I understand this can be really tough to stop living for ourselves. We're in a culture and we're in a society where we're basically programmed through every form of media and everybody we talk to look out for yourself. Take care of your family. Make sure that you're making money for yourself. Make sure that you're doing things that you're comfortable. Make sure that you enjoy your downtime. Make sure that you never get in a situation that's too uncomfortable. The whole society says, you know what, look out for yourself. But Paul says, no. Jesus died for you, so stop living for yourself and start living for him. And, you know, I've looked at, as I was reading this passage, I was convicted of this myself. I said, you know what? I lately have been looking too much at myself, too much at, you know, how my living room looks, and I want to redecorate that lately. And, you know, some of that stuff is okay, but some of it gets really unhealthy when you spend a ton of time and that's all you're consumed by. Or I'm thinking about, how is my whole life going to be more comfortable? I like my life lately. It's really comfortable. Do I actually want to do anything that changes that? Do I want to rock the boat? You know, I don't know. So when I say this, understand, I'm speaking to myself as well. But we have to take our eyes off of ourselves, and we have to put them on the one who offers us life, the one who changes everything for the better. And that's exactly where this passage then continues when we read verse 16. Verse 16, it says, so from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. When we start looking at things the way that Jesus does, through spiritual eyes, the world will look differently to us. Paul even admitted in his day that people were looking at Jesus through physical eyes. That's what he's getting at. We looked at Jesus through worldly eyes, but we do so no longer. The disciples and everybody, when Jesus was there, they're looking at him and saying, Jesus is the Messiah, the fulfillment of the Old Testament prophets. He's going to be king. He's going to overthrow the Roman government who's ruling over us Jews. And he's going to be our new physical king, and we're going to be made into a new nation. That's what they saw with physical eyes. But then Jesus died on a cross. And through worldly eyes, you looked and you went, wow, what a failure. But Paul's saying, it's when you see the world through spiritual eyes that you go, that's no failure at all. That's the king of a new kingdom who's actually won a victory by shedding his blood to satisfy the law so that we'd never have to shed the blood of lambs again. He is God who actually is fulfilling the covenant when God walked between the two animals and said, I will restore the relationship. He is God restoring the relationship. We have to understand that that's what Jesus did, but we only understand it when we see through spiritual eyes. But not only do we see what Jesus did through spiritual eyes, we need to see ourselves and others through those same spiritual eyes. We need to see that those people who hurt us, who are always fighting against you at work, who are the thorn in your side, maybe it's an ex or something that you've got kids with, they're not the enemy. Maybe they're just a person who has broken their relationship with God. They're broken on the inside. They don't have joy. They don't have contentment. They don't have peace. And they're just a person who needs to be saved, like you once were. We see that this world, which seems so far from God, is actually that way because of the fall. We start to understand that. And so whether or not they know it, what we learned in that creation story is all of humanity was created for relationship with God. That's why so many people have all these different religions. We're hardwired to want to be in relationship with God. That's how we as humans function. And so we need to see that when we look at people and we say, wow, they're really kind of out there in what they believe. Yeah, they may not understand who Jesus is, but they're a person who's searching. And that's good. And we can work with that. And we can tell them, you're searching for God? Let me tell you about the God that I know who wants to make himself known to you and wants his relationship with you to be restored. When we look through spiritual eyes, our relationship with God through Jesus is actually, we understand that that's what people actually desire. That they want the peace that we have. So how we interact with our coworkers, our friends, our family members will be totally different when we begin to see their broken relationship with God as part of a spiritual battle that's raging all around them. Rather than being people that we have to convince to believe like we do, we see them as people who actually want to be made known, be made right with God, but don't know how. And so that's our mission. God gave us the ministry of reconciliation. So now we need to know what it means to be ministers of reconciliation and what it actually looks like for us to fulfill this mission. And the first thing that you need to do if you want to join this mission of being a reconciler of people to God is that first, like Paul says in verse 20, he says, we implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. You can't begin to help some people be reconciled, their relationship to God restored, if you haven't experienced it yourself first. Some of you, I think, in this room perhaps know all about God. Maybe you've come to church a lot, and you know about who he is, and you know about Jesus, and you know about now the big story of God, and that we're sinners in need of a Savior, and we need relationship. But I want to ask you, have each one of you truly been reconciled to God? Do you actually have a relationship with Jesus? Because this whole story, it's not just something for us to know. The whole story tells us God wants to be in relationship with us. And so you first have to be in relationship with Jesus Christ before you can join this mission of reconciling others to God. And I know there's others of you who you know that you're reconciled to God. You know you have a relationship with Jesus. But for lots of different reasons, you may never say anything to anybody else about Jesus. You say, Ryan, I understand. You're telling me I need to have this ministry of reconciliation. I know I'm supposed to tell people about Jesus, but I just don't know how. Or maybe I'm afraid of how people are going to receive it. I'm afraid that they're going to make fun of me. Or I'm not comfortable with bringing it up at work. Or I'm worried that they might ask me a question that I'm not going to know the answer to. And I won't know how to reply to that, so I'll feel stupid. So I don't want to do that. Or I don't know how to just start the conversation. Maybe I think I know how to handle the conversation, but I don't know how to get my first step in that door to begin the conversation. We have all sorts of reasons, I think, and many of them very valid reasons for why we just never say something to somebody about Jesus. And for those of you who identify with these words, I think that what you really need, myself included, is a fresh experience of the life-transforming power of Jesus in your life. Sometimes, I mean, brand new Christians who experience full life change, they don't know how to tell anybody about Jesus, but they can be the most impassioned people to just be going out and telling everybody, I met Jesus and you need him. They don't know how to do it. They're just beyond the fear because they're so excited and passionate about Jesus. And I think that that's what we need. We need a rekindled relationship with Jesus. It's when we do that, that all of a sudden, all these other fears and worries that are in the back of our mind that hold us back, they'll just go away. They go right out the window because we just understand, I'm so excited about Jesus that I'm just speaking it. I've experienced this myself in my own life. When I have a great week of prayer, when I have a great, maybe a high spiritual moment, I go to some special retreat, I almost always come back and have way more conversations with people about Jesus out around town than if I'm going through a dry spell, if I'm praying for 5 minutes after I read my Bible for a chapter and things just start to get dry. When I'm in that type of a place, guess what? I'm not telling many people about Jesus. I'm not finding, and in my mind I go, well, I'm just not finding opportunities. But the interesting thing is, if I have just come back from this rekindled relationship experience, then I find opportunities all over the place. So I think what we need isn't to know more and to have all these things put aside or put in place so that we're professionals and we can do this. What we need is a rekindled relationship. If you want to tell people about Jesus, then you have to get excited about what Jesus is doing in your life. And a great way to do this, actually, is to just start with one little step, no matter how inconsequential. Most people will tell you one of the most exciting things that they'll ever do in their life is to lead one of their friends or a family member back to God. When they're part of the process and the journey of watching somebody have their relationship restored to God, that's like the most exciting thing and the most growing thing for a person's faith that you can experience. So my challenge to you is just take that little step. Say, I want this. Jesus, I want a deeper relationship with you, and I want to be used to help reconcile this person or this person back to you. And as we grow in our passion for Jesus, then these little excuses, and they are valid, I get that, don't get me wrong, but they start to become so much less important when we see the great importance of Jesus Christ in their lives. Finally, I know many of us want those around us to be reconciled to God, and we're trying to do that, and we're doing that through all sorts of service to meet the needs of people around us. We're serving a little bit here. We're going and we're reading to the kids in Oak Ridge. We're going out to Crow Creek, and we're pouring foundations. And as a church, we do all sorts of service events because that is so important. Just like Savannah said, we have to meet physical needs of people before they're willing to listen to us. However, We can't stop at simply doing service. It can't stop there. In verse 19, Paul wrote, in the rest of this chapter, I'm not going to go all the way through because then the sermon would be really long, like when Brent preaches. Paul wrote, Jesus has committed to us the message of reconciliation. And then in verse 20, he said, as though God were making his appeal through us. Paul very much has in mind that being messengers of reconciliation includes words. It includes saying the message. We can't become just a people who are doing service for others, or we'll actually miss our high calling of offering the restored relationship to those people who we so desperately want to meet Jesus. And so we have to understand that it's these words that say, yes, we're sinners. You're a sinner, I was a sinner. But we have a God who loved us so much that he actually does all the work to restore our relationship. You don't have to do anything but put your faith in Jesus. You're not too far gone. You're not so bad that you can't be restored in your relationship. I mean, all these things that we can say are incredibly good news for the world around us. But we have to say it. We have to let them know that Jesus died for them and made a way for them to be made right with God. All the service and all the actions are incredibly important. But we have to understand them for what they are. They are a way to open the door to be able to speak the message. So we have to do both. We can't just stop with one or we're missing it. Now here's the important thing to remember from today. Jesus' life, death, and resurrection was the game changer. It was the climax, the turning point in the big story of God. But there are still so many people who haven't heard about him. Or maybe they have, but they don't understand how Jesus actually changes anything. And that's a job that Jesus has now left to us, his church, to finish. We are the hope of this broken world. And since the story is still being written, my question now to you is, what part will yours be? Who are you going to share the message of Jesus with? Right now, I want everybody to take a second and think about who's a person in your life, maybe a family member, a coworker, a neighbor, an old high school friend. Who in your life do you want to commit to pray for? Do you want to be looking for opportunities to say, God, I want to offer reconciliation to this person? Think of that person right now. I challenge you, pray for that person often. When you have that person in mind, when you're looking through spiritual eyes and saying, this is a person who needs Jesus. Maybe this person is a total mess, but guess what? Yes, they're not in relationship with God, and God can restore that relationship. God can change that life. Pray for that person. Look for opportunities to speak into that person's life. We're coming up to the Christmas holiday season. It is a great time to invite people to church. People are a lot more receptive to say, yeah, I'll join you for a Christmas Eve service. I'd like to do that. Invite them. People are actually looking to have a relationship with God. They just don't know how to get there. And quite honestly, a lot of them don't think that the Christian church is the answer. But I think that we can show them it truly is. We find peace with God through our relationship with Jesus. Can you imagine what God could do through Ashworth Road if all of us were stirred in our passion for Jesus, if we had that rekindled relationship, if we understood our role was to be ministers of reconciliation to everybody around us, if we were so passionate about our relationship with Jesus that we didn't let any of these worries hold us back, any of these fears, but we simply stepped out and we said, you know what? I love Jesus, and he's doing some great stuff in my life right now. I had a great devotion this morning, and let me tell you about how God spoke to me in that. And I guarantee they'll say, God spoke to you? Yes, God still speaks to us. Can you imagine if we recognized that being a reconciler meant more than serving people? It meant serving them, but then also telling them about the good news, about inviting them to church. All of this requires seeing people as Jesus does, seeing the spiritual battle that's raging for their souls. It requires speaking life-giving news to people hungry for something that actually offers them the contentment and the peace and the joy that they're after. Can you imagine what would happen in this place if all of us worked together as Jesus' church to bring that message to our community? Now, as I conclude in prayer, I want each one of you to focus on the one person who you want to experience a reconciled relationship with Jesus.